What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of the Friday Pod. I'm coming to you live today from Limassol in Cyprus, and this is the second time we've done this virtual setup. This pod is really interesting and wide-ranging. We started off with me talking about my experience in moving here to this new city on the Mediterranean island, just a 30-minute flight from Israel and the West Bank. We talked about what it's like to be here on the ground. What's the feeling? What's the vibe? Does it feel like home? How much did it cost to immigrate and visas and taxes and all those different things? I think you'll find it interesting. We then talked about two podcasts that we watched during the week that we think everybody in the world really should be watching, which was with two of the people in the senior levels of the Trump administration. We think you'll find that very, very interesting. We also talk about this crazy week we've had with people setting Teslas on fire and what that means to the greater narrative and how the world works today. We also talked about a situation this week where Mark sought advice on a very, very key area of his business that most entrepreneurs face this very, very similar question and problem. And we talked about how we address that challenge around appointing agencies to run your traffic in your business. You think you'll find that super interesting. And then we finished off with talking about how we got called out this week by one of Australia's larger social media content creators and why we think he was wrong, but we still love the guy. So with that said, enjoy the pod. If you do like it, make sure you like, subscribe, drop a comment. As always, we'd love to know what you think. Bye for now. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. This is our brand new format for the Friday sessions. It's our second attempt at linking up from around the world in this digital format. I hope you guys are enjoying it. I'm joining you today from Limassol in Cyprus, right on the Mediterranean, about a half-hour flight from Israel. We have Eric. Where are you coming from, Eric? Where are you?
I'm actually at the studio at Unemployable in Southport on the Gold Coast. So I've got a little setup here. So I was doing a bit of work here and I thought, let's
branded to
do
the
it
max.
Out of here today. Yeah, brand. So we got Unemployable t-shirt. In the reflection. We got Unemployable up top. We got the hat. We got the tee. And I got the undies, but no one's going to see those.
Thank God.
Not even Mark.
Well, I'm barefoot and back in Byron Bay, boys. Just been in Melbourne for the last week, but back in Byron now. I've got the setup. I'm off the mobile device, and I hope you guys can hear me loud and clear this week.
Looking James, good.
Yeah.
I'm at Burley Heads here on the coast. Just looking at the point, watching the waves roll through. So no, not a bad scenario.
Nice. Well, guys, we've got a big ticket today. I thought I'd kick off with just a little story. I think there's a fair bit of curiosity from people about Limassol in Cyprus, where I am. And a lot of people are shocked when they look it up on a map. They go, dude, you like a 30-minute flight from Israel, which is correct. It's kind of just off the coast of the Gaza Strip, which is comforting. It's a very short flight over there. But, you know, I've been here and I have documented this. I've made two videos so far that are about 10 or 12 minutes each where I've documented from leaving Australia, flying through Dubai up to Amsterdam for a few days and down to here and house hunting and doing all that stuff. So I'll let you know when those videos are ready. But it's kind of interesting. I thought maybe you guys might want to – what questions did you want to ask about, like, the move and being here? Like, it's a pretty interesting joint, especially because it's a booming little town. And, I thought you guys might want to ask some questions from an entrepreneurial perspective.
The first question, probably the most important question is, what is your first impressions of the place, the vibe, the people, the atmosphere? Like, did you get there and be like, yeah, I'm gonna love calling this home, or has it been different?
Yeah, mate, that's a really good question. It's interesting because we landed in the airport called Larnaca. It's about an hour drive into Limassol. And so we got in just on sunset and we sort of drove. Topography is very, very similar to Southern California. Like, honestly, it's freaky how close it is to, like, just outside of LA. If you're driving out to Malibu or you're heading out to Vegas, it is so similar. And I was just looking around and go, wow, like, it looks identical. But we came in sort of on sunset, and Limassol is a city right on the Mediterranean, and there's a lot of high-rise development now along the beachfront. And you've got sort of this old town, you know, because this is a very, very old place. Like, when we went to Paphos on the weekend, we were going to ruins that are 2,000 years before Christ. You know, like literally some of the oldest archaeological sites in the world are on this island. It's got a lot of Greek mythology and all this stuff. But then you've also, so you come in, when you come into Limassol, you've got sort of this older town areas with buildings that are really, really old. And then you have like the building I'm in right now. This building is actually the first high rise on the beach that was built in the early 2010s, like 2012, 2013. And now they're going up left and right. But obviously I've had a lot of conflict and crisis here in on this island, because half the island is Turkish and the other half is Cypriot. And there's actually a border right through the capital city where we were yesterday with our advisors, and we met with the Bank of Cyprus yesterday while we were here. But since they've had all this conflict, they've really tried to attract foreign investment. So there's really effective tax rates in Cyprus, which is obviously one of the reasons that I'm here. And as a result, you have these, like yesterday, we were touring an apartment building called Trilogy. And we went through it with the guy who runs the family office who built it. So it's a very wealthy family, built these two towers that are the talk of the town kind of thing. And the one tower, the first half is offices and the top half is residential, and the second tower is full residential. And so the guy who runs the family office for the owners of the buildings took us through, and we were just talking about, you know, Limassol, Cyprus. And he said, we're getting people. Said, that tower there is all expats. Half of it sold to Russians. And just getting their money out of Russia. And, you know, it's you can just see the money pouring in when you look up and down the strip. So it's got this feeling of like a frontier town that is kind of emerging from economic crisis, which is actually what's happening. And you can just see it, like this cool co-working space is opening next to 1,000-year-old buildings in the downtown area in the marina. When you go down to the marina, you know, like apartments we're looking at down in the marina to rent were like 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 euro a month. So, you know, you can sort of add 2/3 on top to get to the Aussie dollar price. But for something that in Australia might be $1,500 a week, here is, you know, double that. So it's quite interesting. But down there on the marina, you have the big boats and super yachts and Western kind of restaurants and whatever. You'll see all this in the videos and releases. But it is, Mark, a very, very big adjustment, because it's, you know, they speak Greek, but everyone speaks English as well, but there's a real melting pot of people here. So I personally love the vibe and love the energy and I feel alive, you know, because in Australia, you know, everything, you know, where everybody is and who everybody is. Whereas here, it's very different. Everything's brand new. So whether it's home or not, I'm not sure yet. You know, it's only been a couple of days. So we literally don't know anybody here. So, yeah, but it's very cool. I'm enjoying it so far.
How many days a year must you be there in relation to the tax code or the citizenship?
To be a tax resident of Cyprus, the minimum is 60 days a year. And then as long as you are not anywhere else long enough that any other country can claim you as a tax resident, which is basically six months a year. So as long as you don't spend 6 months a year anywhere else, and you spend 60 days a year here, but you do have to have a permanent long-term rental, or you need to buy a property so that you've got an address, a utility bill, and all that sort of stuff. So minimum 60 days, and then you're a tax resident. But yesterday we went, like, I think this might be helpful for the listeners. We went up to, I'm using an advisory firm here to help me with all my immigration and banking and visas and all of that. They specialize in this. It was a referral from my accountant in Melbourne of 30 years. They're in the same accounting network. So I've been working with them for months, and they do everything from all your immigration visas, your company formations. They set the meetings up with the banks. And yesterday I went and met them for the first time, and then we went to the Bank of Cyprus, who is the bank we're probably going to bank with. But because it's a tax efficient environment, and when you look around here, quite a few of the big buildings are sports betting companies, so there's a lot of sports betting. Apparently there's a lot of porn and different things here as well, so they get all kinds of people wanting to come in and set business up here, because the tax rate is 12.5%, but then dividends, after you've paid your corporate tax of 12.5%, there's no tax on your dividends at all. There's no capital gains tax and all these different things. So obviously these tax incentives are bringing entrepreneurs from all over the world who are headquartering here. And when I say entrepreneurs, that's a very broad definition, if you know what I mean.
So, what can go wrong? Porn
like oligarchs. I mean,
porn hub and Russians.
Exactly.
Now, Adam, what is it like, minus the flights and your hotels and stuff like that, what would it actually cost someone that would be thinking, you know what, I'm in a high tax bracket, I'm flexible, you know, they're thinking about different areas like Dubai and, you know, Monaco. What does it cost you so far in regards to, you know, fees and, you know, residency fees and obviously your advisors and sitting down with accountants and company structure? How much would it have costed you, if you don't mind, you know, rough ballpark? Sure. So someone that's watching is interested in this. Is it a 10 grand exercise? It is a 100 grand exercise? Is it more?
No. It's like 10 to 15 grand for your company, your banking, and that's for you and your partner, for your visas and status. And then, of course, you've got to get your residency. So as in, you've got to get a place to rent. What's interesting about the renting, and we've been looking at this, we've been like, do we want to go and spend, you know, 4 to 6, 7,000 euros a month on a long-term rental? Or do we want to get like this, like you can go out to Larnaca where the airport is and this brand new development. Larnaca is really booming. It's not like Limassol, sort of where all the expats are, and Paphos is more sort of a holiday, but stunning out at Paphos as well. But at Larnaca, there's a lot of new development, and you can rent like a one bedroom brand new apartment for 700 euros a month. So that's about 12 grand a year. So for 12 grand a year, you can have this brand new lock up one bedroom apartment. That's your residency sorted. And then if you are only going to be here 8 weeks a year, then maybe your Airbnb somewhere really nice, and, you know, for the 8 weeks that you're here, and then just keep your 12 grand a year lock up. And that's just a fee that you pay for your residency, is another way to do it. So we're just sort of navigating all of that and talking to people about what the best way to do these things are. But the thing I love the most, Eric, is that it's an adult. You realize in Australia, not to shit on Australia, because I love Australia, it's a beautiful place, but you don't have that level of oppression here. There's a lot more freedom. Like, you know, it's people cruising around on scooters and they're parking on sidewalks and smoking cigars, walking down the streets. And like, adults can be adults here. It's a bit more, it's not as controlled. You see stuff here that you go, oh my God, in Australia, like we're in Amsterdam having a coffee, and like we're in this little back street and this truck just like pulls up onto the curb and just enough for a car to get by. And this chick jumps out. She comes into the croissant shop. She just grabs a coffee and a croissant, leaves the truck parked on the footpath. And I said to Cass, in Australia, there'd be people out of their mind. There's no red cones. And like, just in case you can't see the truck, they put red cones around it.
You'd have like a fine you'd have a fine in 5 minutes.
Yeah, like
I mean, it's only early days. As you said, you've been in Limassol for a couple, but I'm sure you've poked around a little bit. If you were to give Limassol like a comparison, is it like a broad beach, main beach that's sort of on the Gold Coast-ish? And if so, like where the expats are living in the nice high-rise, if a high-rise here is 20 grand a meter, what's it over there to real estate prices? I know you said the rent was fairly exorbitant compared to Aussie rents, but is the actual retail pricing in correlation?
Yeah, it's similar. It's quite similar. To buy here as well is quite similar to the Gold Coast. So if you imagine the Gold Coast and you imagine the oldest rundown parts of the back streets of Miami, like where it's really old and run down, like the worst parts of Surfers Paradise, where it's old and the buildings kind of falling down. If you imagine that's a majority, and then you've got these new developments coming through that's revitalizing it, that's what it feels like to live here. That's at the moment, with some really beautiful stuff on the beach, and the old town is like starting to redevelop. So, you know, it's really cool. I don't want to do the whole pod on it, but I thought it might be interesting for people. When we were down at the old port, it was a really funny thing happened. We were walking along day one. We'd literally just come out of the apartment here, walked down the beachfront all the way down to the port. And this lady and her husband came up to us on the street going, oh my God, we follow us the pod. We love unemployment. Nah. And yeah, it was crazy. And so we stopped and got a photo with them, and they were in on a cruise ship. And they were like, we knew you were here. We follow you on socials, and we didn't think we'd bump into you. And then we took photos and had the unemployable hat. And it was crazy.
Wow.
Small world.
That's golden. Small world.
But overall,
talking about a small world. Last year, and I went on a cruise. It's in Australia. It was full of Australians, but I got stopped by someone on the cruise. Said, "Oh, I see you on the pod," and da 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 da. And, you know,
really?
Yeah, fluff the feathers. the bird I was with thought I was a superstar, so I played it up a little bit, you know. So,
I'm going to tell my story as well. It's not as good as you guys, but we go to a shared workspace when I'm in Melbourne, and I went into this shared workspace, and the guy that kind of sits on the opposite side of me, he's like, "Oh, I've seen you guys on the pod. I said, very good. Been watching it every week." And I'm like, "Oh, really?" It's like, it's pretty surreal. I mean, would have been more surreal finding someone in Cyprus come up to you and say this, they're watching it. But
yeah,
instead of your mum.
I saw you on a bus.
What are you saying?
To get this, when I went to buy this microphone, I called Video Pro in on the Gold Coast before I left, trying to see if they had this mic in stock. And the guy said, "Are you the guy from Unemployable? I listen to it on the way into work every day. Just listening to you is kind of weird." So
yeah, it's growing, because like I was at my daughter's soccer game, and I posted on Instagram just the soccer game itself, and then I got a DM from a guy saying, "Hey, I seen you there, but I didn't want to interrupt you in the soccer game, but I've been following the pod since the beginning. Your daughter was playing my daughter's team, and they're from Brisbane. They're from Wynnum." And he's like, "Just wanted to let you know, loving the pod, but just didn't want to interrupt you, you know?" And I was like, "Wow, that's cool." Nice. So we're picking up momentum, boys. It's one of those things of what is showing up every week. And I wanted, you wouldn't have heard this, Adam. We interviewed a lady last week, which I think everyone listening to this pod should listen to the story. And it's about consistency. She retired at 50 years old. Her and her husband retired. They had a few cafes and different businesses, and, you know, traveled the world, had margaritas by the pool and the beach, and she got bored quite quickly. And she was into her fitness, and she was into her styling and whatnot. So she goes, "You know what, I'm going to start doing some YouTube videos on styling." So she started doing that, and then she pivoted and started doing videos around fitness. And she has a business called Fabulous 50s. You should look her up on YouTube. Anyways, fast forward 8 years. She's got 2 million subscribers on this YouTube channel. She gets 3 million views a month and 400,000 hours of watch time a month. And all she started with and still has today is two cameras on a tripod that she presses record. She does her workouts. She sends it out. And then 2 million subscribers from all over the world. And at any one time, she has over 40,000 people, majority of them are women, 60,000 people, majority of them are women from all over the world, signing up to her challenges.
Weekly.
And yeah, so it goes to show you, and I asked her, I said, "So what's the secret?" Right? She's like, consistency, showing up every week, putting out the content. And after a year, after 2 years, after 3 years, and 8 years later, here she has this pretty monstrous business. And funny enough, she signed up as a coaching client this week because she now wants to build up awesome brands, which was quite interesting. But it goes to show you, you know, people coming up to us and people DMing us and recognizing us, that's just going to be, obviously, that's going to increase over time just because we've been showing up for the past 14, 15 months. And I think anyone else that's trying to build a following or a YouTube channel or a business or learning about property, just anything around that wealth creation, again, it's just showing up every day, every week. And that's what we've been doing, right? So
and being prepared to suck. Being prepared to suck at first. You know, one of my favorite things is when I look at these influencers, or that's the word for them, but you know, you go to their channel, go to Patrick Bet David, go to Joe Rogan, go to Fabulous 50s, and go to their channel, and then go and reorder the videos so it shows you the oldest first. And go and look at where they started, because I can guarantee you, even us, our first pod is so different to where we are now.
Oh,
you've
man.
Got to have the, so you've mad. Got to have the courage to, I mean, we all have less hair.
That's, isn't it weird?
We've all had hair transplants.
Reordering.
Bullshit, I've got more hair.
Well, Mark's got actually, a toupee, according to one listener last week.
I got more hair, but
Mark, you got for real, right? Mark got toasted in the comments last week.
You did.
She say, "Oh,
you got a fucking toupee."
Love message, because I care. Your hairpiece is too dark. It's like, get fucked. That's real, baby.
All right, so let's change gears, guys. That's a great story, Eric. Thanks for sharing. If you are in that world, make sure that, you know, like, that just, you just got to publish, right? Like, there's a great book called The Icarus Deception by Seth Godin, and it's on the courage that it takes to publish anything, art, music, podcast, anything. It's only art when you publish, right? So read that book if you're interested in this. There's huge incentives there, people. It's called The Icarus Deception. It's only a short book, and it talks about the story of Icarus, you know, the boy flew too close to the sun. Yep. And Aussies love telling people, you know, don't fly too close to the sun because the wax will melt your wings and you'll fall in the ocean. That's the story that everybody's... But the Seth Godin book exposes the fact that that story is not complete with that narrative. It's actually also says, be careful not to fly too close to the ocean and the waves. So it's a really good book, very short, very, very good for people who want to do anything creatively.
The co-author is Tupay Johnson.
I can't tell if that's a fucking joke or not. But anyway,
we're all laughing, so I'd assume it is.
I'm going to put myself on the hook. I've been talking to you guys and wanting to start like a macro podcast. There's so many people that are asking questions on the Instagram and, you know, asking finance related questions. And I've been, you know, waiting to get the right equipment and waiting to have a better story to tell and waiting to hone my craft. But I'm going to put myself on the hook. I'm going to start that podcast and I'm going to start posting it to YouTube. I've got a name. I won't reveal it yet, but I'm going to give you guys an update each week on how it's going when I go from one follower to two. And I'm going to put myself on the hook now and say I'm going to start publishing. So thanks for the info, boys.
Good on you.
You know that, Mark, I'm encouraged to hear that because, I mean, you, this week, we'll get to it in a minute. I want to talk about Elon's week, you know, and the counter narrative that was put out there by the lefties who still hate Elon and have been literally setting their Teslas on fire and filming it. But how much money has been made in the last few days from people who are smart enough to see beyond this bullshit narrative and actually look to the fundamentals. But I want to touch on, before we jump into that, two pieces of content I watched this week, and I know a couple of you guys watched as well. If you guys have not seen the two interviews on the All In podcast, so All In, if you don't know what we're talking about, look up All In podcast, as in poker, All In, and look up the two interviews that came out this week, one with the Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and the other one with Howard Lutnick. So these are two very senior people in the White House. Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of Treasury. They are two of the best business interviews and political interviews that I have ever seen and have huge consequences, I think, for the world. If you are a hater of the Agent Orange, you know who I'm talking about, this may get you to rethink. Because the quality of the people around this administration is mind-blowing to me. Now, I have some reservations about some of the stuff in the pods, but I'd love to get your take, guys, on if you watch these two podcasts, what you took out of it and why people who listen to our pod need to go and watch those two interviews. Might start with James. What are your takeaways from what you said?
Look, I'm not a massive political follower or a market man like Mark is, but I watched both of them just last night. And I was glued to them. Just the, as you said, the quality of the humans that Trump's put in his cabinet are incredible. I mean, Scott Bessent was a trader with Drucken. Drucken and Soros, Drucken and Jim Ross, although Jim Rogers,
Druckenmiller.
That's it. So some of the best traders on the planet, macro traders, and just his whole take on how the U.S. economy. Is working, more so the global economy and his backstory on how he got to where he got to, and how he's got now has full buy-in as a politician versus a market trader, and then also with Lutnick as well. I think he's worth about $2 billion, and his backstory to where he got to as well is quite profound. And have these two guys who know exactly what the fuck's going on from a market's perspective, and it was a very nuanced piece. He actually pulled the All In guys up. He said, at least we've got business people. And they said, no, we've got markets people in here. That's me. And business people in the cabinet as well. And it was that distinction was quite good. You've got Trump, who's a businessman. Then you've got market analysis like Lutnick and Bessent also giving advice to the president. And their actual, not just those guys, how impressive they were, but how they actually spoke about Trump, the real Trump, that the mainstream media does not shine a light on. his decision-making process and just how he is as a person. So as a, you know, that was my take on it overall. Mark probably had a bit more on the key distinctions and takeaways than I would, but I highly, highly, highly suggest you will go and watch those two. I'll certainly change your view on the US and Trump. The other one I watched in the wee hours this morning was cabinet meeting that they had, and that was quite impressive as well. They had all those guys and more, all his hit squad around the table, and that was very impressive also. And just some of the stuff they're uncovering with this Doge and the impact that Elon specifically is having. I mean, half of this stuff wouldn't happen without Elon now. Actually, none of it would be happening there without Elon pulling the levers to find all these holes in the US economy, which are huge, and they're only going to get larger by the sounds of it from what's coming down the pipe. So that's pretty much my take on it. As I said, I'm not a market guy, but I'm sure Marky DePaul will have a few pretty key takeaways.
Yeah, to your point, James, they are leaning on Elon Musk very heavily for the majority of the things that they're trying to execute on. And if you listen to those interviews, you'll see what I mean. The thing that struck me about those interviews that I thought were just so incredible was the level of access and transparency to the men that are going to be trying to pull America and the global economy forward over the next 4 years. And they're basically telling you what they're going to do and the implications of the things that they're going to do. These two gentlemen, whether you like DJT or not, these two gentlemen are guys that have pulled themselves up from their bootstraps and they're, you know, self-made. I don't like that term because everybody gets some help along the way, but resilient individuals as well. Howard Lutnick lost something like 650 of his closest friends and business and colleagues that worked for him in the 9/11 bombing, the towers, plane crashes. So he not only had to save his business, but he had to do it with, after losing, you know, 650 of his closest people. And so his story of building himself back up from that is phenomenal. And Scott Bessent was working with Stanley Druckenmiller, who's renowned by many in this game as the best trader that's ever lived, and George Soros. And he was the one that identified the opportunity to bet against the British pound back in the 90s, I think it was. And they basically bet against the UK and the British pound, and they made an absolute killing. Like, these guys are masters of the universe when it comes to markets. And now you've got this level of talent on the inside of the government trying to pull and steer the ship forward as opposed to just academics, right? And I think this, Adam, you said it, James, you said it, but this level of talent within a government, it's unmatched. I don't think we've ever seen it. I don't know because I wasn't there, but there is talk that the founding fathers of America were entrepreneurially driven and entrepreneurial minded. But you know, whether you like this administration, whether you're a Democrat, independent, whatever you are, if this administration pulls off the things that they are saying that they are trying to do, it is going to, I guarantee this, it's going to usher in a golden age of economic prosperity, not just for the US, but for the Western world. And that's what they're aiming for. They're not holding back. They're going for it. So yeah, anyone involved in business, anyone that likes money, I recommend watching these podcasts because they're phenomenal.
You should.
I haven't watched them yet.
Just before I pass over, that third piece, Mark, you'll get a kick out of it. As I said, that cabinet meeting this morning that I watched live.
I saw that.
The amount of cuts, they are fucking tearing that place to pieces. Like with the machete, they're not mucking around at all. And then you sort of heard of the pushback of all the government employee jobs that are gone. That's why half the hatred's coming through, but they're going to be replacing those jobs with much higher paying private sector jobs on the way out. So it was interesting to listen to them all sit around and have the mastermind.
Let's just call it for what it is, right? Like most of the people watching the show would be business people or aspiring business people. If 25% of your receipts, if 25% of your invoices was through one client, that's a pretty significant risk to your business, right? If 25% of your revenue comes through one client, 25% of the US GDP was coming through Washington, DC, so through the government. That's not sustainable, right? And so they're rebalancing what was a very fat and heavily weighted towards government economy. And this is relevant for us back here in Australia as well, because I don't know the exact figures, so don't quote me. Someone fact check me on this, but some ridiculous number like 50% of the jobs created in the last 12 months or 2 years have been NDIS jobs, or maybe I'm getting that confused. Maybe it's 25% and one in five people in Australia are disabled. So one in five people in Australia are qualifying for NDIS benefits, and something like 25 or 50% of the jobs created. And we'll fact check this and put it in the show notes, but it's a ridiculous number are going through our NDIS disability scheme. That is not a sustainable way to run and build and grow a country. And so, we need our own little doge here. I tell you that much.
I just read an article earlier today speaking on that and employment in this country. And over 65s are coming back into the market, into the employment market. And it's increased over 10% over the last 15 years. So at the moment, in this article, they're saying that 16% of our Australian workforce are over the age of 65. And I remember growing up listening to these commercials, Freedom 55. I don't know if you guys had that in Australia or not, but Freedom 55 was a thing, and, you know, planning to retire at 55. And, you know, a lot of, you look at superannuation and whatnot, and people should be looking at, you know, probably retiring or slowing down at 65, in my opinion, depending on what you're doing, especially if you've been in the workforce for over, you know, 40 years. And it's increasing, which what that tells me is people can't afford to retire in this country, right? There's going to be a certain amount of people that are going back into the workforce because they may be bored. But at the same time, I'm assuming a lot of people are becoming forced to go back into this workforce at the over the age of 65 because they just can't afford to live a lifestyle in this country. But they won't.
Yeah, it's definitely no news there. I mean, people know the cost of living is getting out of control. Going back to the Lutnick interview, one of the things that I thought was interesting, so for those who don't have context, this whole, they've got a $2 trillion deficit that they're trying to fix, and Elon's trying to cut a trillion, and Howard is trying to add a trillion to the budget. That's kind of the bottom line that Howard talked about on the pod. But as much as I love the positivity, and I love hearing business people and investors in places of power and that have their hearts in the right place. But one thing that I found a bit alarming, two things. One was when Howard was saying with Trump, they're like, you know, we should be able to, like, you know, if we're going to give a company the green light to do business with the US government, they should give us the service for free. And, you know, it'd be great if we could take equity in the company. And I'm like, before the you know, company gets granted the contract. And I thought, whoa, that's pretty alarming, right? Like, can you imagine the incentives, you know, like during COVID or whatever, where, you know, if governments could take equity in the drug companies they're about to approve and put it into a federal, a strategic reserve for the nation. I think that's a very, very slippery slope that I think they need to keep a very close eye on. And the other thing that I observed over the last little while about all of this is, you know, as you said, James, they're taking a blowtorch to not just like it's a blowtorch and it's an axe, and they're just like, when you're taking $1 trillion out of the budget, it's a lot. At the same time, it was kind of so obvious, but for people who are still asleep and are not, you know, watching what's really happening, you would have noticed at the same time, Elon, there was an absolute war campaign against the guy. You know, people, you know, social media blew up with people rebadging their Teslas and setting their Teslas on fire and marching on Tesla, you know, dealerships and doing all this crazy stuff. And the media's all over it, just like trying to destroy Elon, right? And, you know, interestingly, I think when you look at the investment side, macro, Mark would have a view on this, but you see, like, the general public who are educated were just buying Tesla shares, and we've watched Tesla go hit a bottom and just go like this, right? Because I think people are starting to understand that this is bullshit, and it's a beat up by the media which is driven by the powers that be that have this vendetta against what Elon's doing, right? Like these people in formerly in power are doing whatever they can to just ruin this guy. But the average man on the street should be cheering for him. I'm just flabbergasted by all these people that are marching, you know, saying, you know, all this crap and thinking like, Elon's done so much for the, is doing so much for the country, has done so much for so many people, and yet he's copping shit at the highest level. Have you guys got any comment on sort of that stuff?
I mean, I think it's the height of stupidity, but we knew it was going to happen, right? When Trump won by such a massive margin, we knew that the scapegoats would be the entrepreneurs and people that supported him, because they can't touch Trump anymore. What they tried to kill him, they tried to put him in jail, they've tried everything, and he still won by a landslide. He has the voice and he has a mandate from the American people, so that it really, it was futile for them to continue to keep going after Donald Trump. And so we knew as soon as he got into power that they were going to start targeting Elon. But
it's like they haven't learned anything, Mark. Like they're using the same dirty tactics they tried on Trump. I mean, who honestly in their right mind believes Elon is a Nazi?
Well, like, the thing that has shocked me and surprised me most is the amount of wackos or leftist lunatics on the internet that are actually supportive of this hatred and this violence. Like there's well-known renowned journalists and people that have got public profiles and work for the government of the United States out there saying things like, let's get him on my birthday, guys, referring to Elon Musk. If that is not inciting violence, like I'm sorry, but if you go out there and you damage somebody else's personal property, someone that you've never ever met, because you've got beef, justified or not, with the founder of the company who created that product.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
And you think that it is justified to be doing that, or if you're cheering on the people that are out there doing it, and you think you're part of the good guys, you need to take a long, solid, hard look in the mirror, because there's no way. There is no way that your distrust or your hate for an individual can allow you to go out and do something like that. It's just crazy. And to think that people, we've gotten to the point where people think it's okay to be creating, it's an act of terrorism, throwing a Molotov cocktail into a charging station. It is terror. It's terrorism.
And it's like nuts. It's ridiculous. And then in the same week, Elon did his Tesla update and reported to his shareholders and doing his speech, and he was just saying, yeah, you know, he said it's the car, we're the number one car company, Barnett, petrol or EV on the planet. He just kept going through all these stats, and he was going through the whole Tesla suite of products, from wall batteries through all the different hundreds of products the guys are building for humanity. He's just saying, yeah, it's real crazy. Every time I turn the TV on, I just see my cars are on fire. And he said some kind of psycho, and just brushes it off. Like, I mean, the guy's made of tungsten. I mean, if that something like that doesn't rattle you somewhat, yeah, he's definitely a special animal, that's for sure.
It's wild. And Adam, I think I sent it to you guys in the group chat in our crypto or our Tesla or our stock, whatever, that group chat where we talk about investments. And I sent, like, Tim Walz, who was running for vice president of the United States, gets up on stage and says, you know, guys, I downloaded the stock app and I put Tesla on my watch list just to get a buzz as it's going down, it's 25 and dropping. Like, I sent that to you guys and I said, like, Tim Walz, bottom, like, because this is going to be the bottom, this guy creating such a stupid, because when you see things like that in the market, you know that it's gone absolutely way too far to one side, and that's when the market is about to turn. But let's put that aside for a minute, because, you know, I made money on that trade, but this is the guy who was running for vice president of the United States of America, basically saying that he takes joy from one of his American companies failing. You're supposed to be the steward of every American company. If you had that position, a privileged position of power, every American company is like one of your children, because that's what you're there to do, to protect the American people and their businesses. And you're out there saying things like this. And he was that close to being vice president of the United States. Guys, like, I don't care who you vote for, right? But that has got to be a scary thought, to hear people saying that about incumbent businesses. It's just wild. Like, we just can't have people like that in running for office.
It's just amazing how people can dislike someone so much that they haven't even met and will never meet and will never have a conversation with at all, just by, you know, watching what he's doing and, you know, basically, you know, like, calling him a Nazi and all these things, like, which is absolute rubbish. But, like, the way I look at it is this, like, how do you not back the smartest, if not one of the smartest human beings on planet Earth? And for those of you guys that think of Tesla, it's not just Tesla as a car manufacturer. If you actually do some digging and see what they're actually working on in behind the scenes, whether you like it or not, it is happening, right? Robots are coming, right? Automated taxis, all these types of things are happening. You know,
not to mention, Eric, free energy, right? Like, I'm about to install a Tesla Powerwall and some solar panels, and that'll allow me to go off grid and not have any energy bills. So we'll be heading to it. If this company succeeds, we're going to be heading to a world where the cost of energy could come down to zero.
Yeah. Look what he's doing with Starlink. To give you an example, here in our podcast studio, during the cyclone that we had a couple of weeks ago, NBN was down, and it was down for a long time. Then it came back up. Then it was down. Guess what internet we were using, right? Our Wi-Fi guy was, you know, streaming on Starlink. We were using Starlink. If we did not have Starlink, what would we have done? We wouldn't be able to upload and record these podcasts for that week because the internet is down. He's solving such massive...
Eric, that's a great point, you know, because all the Free Palestine supporters, you know, going on about Elon, but they don't realize that, not Free Palestine, Ukraine supporters, right? It was Elon that gave Ukraine free Wi-Fi and internet at the start of that war with Starlink. Without that, it would have been trouble.
That war would have been over in the first couple of months because all their important comm systems and defense systems were relying on connectivity, and they were down.
And just imagine, like, go ahead, Eric. No, you go.
You go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, to really paint a picture for Australians who are anti-Elon, I ask you this question. Imagine if it was announced tomorrow that Elon and all of his companies were going to headquarter in Australia. Can you imagine the impact that would have if he was going to move all his gigafactories and was going to build all his infrastructure and he was going to make his cars and his batteries and all this stuff? Imagine the economic impact, all the jobs that would be created, the construction that would happen. Like, people don't understand the impact. To your point, Mark, we as people need to champion captains of industry from our countries and compete for them to be in Australia as a future. Eric, you were going to say...
I think people, like, when I talk to people that don't like Elon as an example, or don't like what's happening with the new administration, they're talking about, like, how much control are held in so few hands. But what they don't realize, it's always been like that, right? It's just new hands. That's all it is, you know, but power is always held in few hands. And that's what people need to realize. It's just a different face. And it's the same thing. The way we've been conditioned growing up, right, is the rich guy the billionaire is the bad guy, right? And it's always going to be like that. And that's one of the issues, even in business, and in the people that listen to the podcast and the people we're trying to help with that imposter syndrome and the rest of it, is because everyone has a fear of being judged. We were on a call last night and the whole call was talking about this and people feeling like they're inadequate because they've got a business, but their business isn't big enough that they feel that they, you know, have, you know, the scores on the board to talk to that person, you know. And it shouldn't be like that at all. And it's the same thing when we're looking at the Elon Musks of the world. Majority of people don't like him because they want to be like him.
Right. To some extent. To some extent,
you know, whether it's the wealth or whether it's the fame, or like, he's one of the most famous guys on planet Earth. The guy's never been in a movie, right? Like, he's and the fame that he's been gathering over the years, just because of what he's doing. And the reality is, yes, he is changing the world as we know it. Whether you like it or not, it's happening. And there's not really much you can go and burn as many Teslas as you want. You know, he'll just, again, like James said, he'll just brush it off, laugh, and just keep going and run through the statistics.
Not financial advice, but I'm a big believer in Tesla and Elon. And, you know, I wish I had more free cash last week to pile in at low 200s, but exciting times. So let's change gear for the last stretch here. Mark, you sent an email during the week for advice. Maybe you could just outline the email that you sent to us and, you know, what you are looking for advice on, because every small business, or every business really, you know, has this decision that you were facing. Maybe you could just tell us what or tell the audience, what was the email that you sent to us? Why were you seeking feedback?
Yeah. So a little bit of level setting and background. We've basically got a successful Amazon brand and or two Amazon brands, one established, one that's quite new. And so we kind of know what's going on with Amazon. And we're at this point where we're deciding, are we going to continue to launch products on Amazon and just kind of cruise through that process? Or are we going to finally give the off Amazon spigot a shake, right? Give, because we've got the Shopify stores and all the infrastructure and foundation set up now. And I've stepped back from the day-to-day running of my business, and I've been doing a lot of strategizing and long and hard thinking about what the business needs, what the biggest bottlenecks are. And, you know, one of the missing pieces was Meta ads. And I met someone at the Grand Prix who was an ad agency and talked a really big game. And I have no doubt that he probably would have been really, really good at Meta ads. But he was talking about wanting a little bit of equity in order to kind of grow sales to a certain level. And I was a little bit in kind of intoxicated by that offer, because I thought, you know, here, I'm going to have someone that's going to come along and, you know, take that off my hand. And that's such a key and integral part of what's missing to kind of drive our business forward. And so I sent it around to you guys for some advice, and you gave me some of the straight up direct advice based on experience also, though, that I just thought was really, really valuable. And I'll let you explain what you basically said in the email, because you can probably remember it better and tell it back better than me. But I went away able to take a step back, remove the emotion, and really see things a lot more clearly. And I discovered that what I was missing was a piece in behind that, before the ads, that content piece and that ability to create that content flywheel. And that if I was considering giving out equity and things like that, that I should potentially be saving it for a role like that. But yeah, maybe you can give a rundown of that email, because I just thought the way that you delivered it was I just felt really grateful to have people that in my circle that I could ask that kind of thing and get such a clear, direct answer that allowed me to step back and really look at the problem for what it was.
Yeah, this has been something we've all had experience with as entrepreneurs. If we're trying to sell something online, you know, the gateway to our future is through a handful of platforms, Meta and a couple of others. And so it's a technical gate, right? Like you've got to have some degree of technical proficiency and understanding. And it's oftentimes for entrepreneurs, we create products, we create brands, we love that side of it. But when it comes to looking at a screen and, you know, managing these sort of technical areas. So And you're right, it is a big unlock for many, most businesses. But if you talk to any experienced business got to scale, like Eric's company, for those who are listening, mxstore.com.au, you know, big business, $100 million a year kind of range in sales, sooner or later in the journey, they have to bring that competency in-house. They need to get somebody who can manage traffic and so on. And so I said to Mark, like, I get kind of pissed, and I know James is sitting there, he's ready to unload as well, but you get these agency owners, oftentimes young guys who talk a big game, and they're like, I want, you know, $5,000 a month retainer. Then they have this tiered system where they get paid more the more that you spend on traffic. And then this particular person was asking for equity in the business on top. So they've got no skin in the game. They're getting paid a solid retainer. They're getting paid a percentage of what you spend. Just, it doesn't take any more time really to manage the campaigns than if you're spending 10 grand a month or 100 grand a month. Yet they want a percentage of that extra spend. And then the equity on top was just like, I just said to Mark, dude, I understand the feeling of relief when somebody who talks well and is competent says, I'll take all this off your hands. It's so easy to go, yes, my prayers have been answered. But time after time after time with these agencies, it's all like dating, right? It's all exciting and people putting their best foot forward to start. But after a few months, it just starts to become, you know, if it's the wrong agency. I've almost never seen that work for the entrepreneur, and it ends in tears. And I said, Mark, you've got to do the work like I did with DriveFunch. I actually went on to Upwork and ended up paying $1,000 a month for 4 phone calls that run for 45 minutes each with a PPC coach based in Perth who's a really, really high-level PPC guy. I said, I don't want to hire you as a PPC guy. I want you to train me how to run my own Google ads. And after 8 weeks, I can now go into a Google campaign and look at it and understand it and structure it and do it all right myself. So I just sort of said, Mark, you need to hire, and you need to incentivize that hire, maybe in the long term with some equity, but in the short term, align incentives and just do the hard thing. James, yeah. What did you have to say?
I echo what you guys, what you said there. And, you know, I did say to Mark as well, look, there are ways to structure it where you're not at risk. Equity is the most expensive form of payment. So, you know, if you did happen to find someone out there that was an absolute weapon, you can put, as you said, put them on a cliff, on phantom equity over time, so you're not actually giving away the document up front. And especially what you did there, right, Adam, these fucking agencies, they're all like exactly like dating. It's all fun and games in the first 3 to 6, and then after that, it just turns into some fat, sloppy partner on the couch, basically, for analogy, that they just don't give a fuck, and they just don't answer. The response time frames become less and less, the less shit they give, and then you just want to boot it out the door.
Oh, wow. Is that what you're experiencing at the moment, James?
No. Just in general.
It sounds like
Adam started with the narrative of the girlfriend, so I thought I'd just play along and add a bit of color to it.
It's funny, right? No, I was just going to say, like, I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs or as business people, we're embarking on something that we haven't done before. And what I find often with the employee or even some freelancers model is that when you ask your employees or your freelancers to kind of take control of these decisions, they struggle to make decisions. And, you know, the reason that they struggle to make decisions, I think, is for the same reason that I wouldn't say I'm struggling, but in order to make this decision, like the amount of people that I'm reaching out to get opinion from people who have seen this or had this road or traveled this road in their business has just been, this has taken me weeks and weeks and weeks to mull over this decision and to understand which way to move forward. I've obviously spoken to all you guys. I've spoken to 2 other e-commerce entrepreneurs who basically were the one-man band doing their ads, content, and everything themselves. I'm about to meet with Dan from MX Store on Thursday to get his expert opinion. And I'm going to take in all the information that I possibly can. And I think Howard Lucknick said this about Trump, that he makes decisions by orchestra. He lets everyone play their music, and then he goes and makes the decision that it's going to be right. But having heard everyone's opinion and everyone's kind of it's allowing me to see things that I didn't previously see. It's allowing me to see things that I wouldn't have seen until going through the experience. So that's been a profound learning for me. And I was, you know, from a technical point of view, I was able to realize, and this might be helpful for listeners who are in a similar situation, I was able to realize through speaking to everyone that the main bottleneck wasn't in fact Facebook ads or Google ads, that we would be able to go out there and find someone within a 10% range that would be just as good as this agency quite easily. The bottleneck was finding someone who can drive the content flywheel and take brand ownership of that content flywheel. And, you know, I'll give you an analogy. I've got a mate who was running a business doing about $300,000-$400,000 a month drop shipping. And he said sometimes he'd spent thousands on campaigns and hours on scripts. And other times he'd just hire someone from YouTube for a $150 video. And the video on YouTube was the one that like went crazy, went wild, and was just generating him, you know, $70,000 a month. And so it's not the content itself, it's someone who can create the content flywheel and take ownership for that. So that was a learning that when I started this process 2 months ago, I had no idea that that was the missing piece. But now I feel like I'm quite confident that that is the missing piece. And I have,
Mark, I said that in the email to you. I said that the agencies want you to believe that it's in this, you know, setup and management of the campaigns. It's not. When you actually go do the work, like I was doing, the work, and when learned it, you realize that the secret sauce is actually the content creation. And, you know, the guy, I pulled out that line in his quote to you, the proposal, and he said, "We are specialists in content strategy. We don't create the content, but we will advise." Well, that's because all the fucking work is in the actual creating of the content, right? Yeah, happy to advise on a huge retainer or percentage of spend and percentage of equity on the back end, but we're not actually going to do that work. And a great tip for those watching, go and watch the podcast with Gabby from cmycubes.com, who talks about how she's got this young guy. Go to her Instagram. She's got a champion young guy in his 20s who is the face of their product, and they pay him, I think it's $4,000, $5,000 a month retainer, and he's out of his mind, loves it. He's the face of it. If you look, we've got one coming up a pod. It's not released yet, but Clutch Glue, which is the glue that sticks clothing onto girls' bodies, the female founder of that is an absolute killer. And she is the sole face of her Instagram account and makes millions and millions of dollars a year from just having one person responsible for the content. So, but if you look at Gabby from CMI Cubes.
That's so wild, Adam, because that night after the proposal and after I sent the email to you guys to kind of give you feedback, Dom and I actually had a date night planned, and you know, it wasn't the ideal thing to be discussing business at the date night, but it was in our relationship, it's also one of the biggest bottlenecks, because if we can solve that problem, we can solve so much of our free time and having the space for one another. So we spoke about it, and Dom was happy to kind of have the conversation and speak about it. And it was a beautiful dinner. And then we went to a show at the Collingwood Town Hall afterwards, where the side note, but the there was violinists basically playing Hans Zimmer soundtracks from movies. That was awesome. But in that conversation, Dom actually brought up the podcast from CMY Cubes. And she's like, "It's like the girl from CMY Cubes." I'm like, "What, which girl from CMY Cubes?" She goes, "Oh my God, have you not watched that podcast? Like, that's what we need. We need to go with that model." And so Dom actually said at that dinner, "This is the model we need to go with." And so more clarity was built, and just pieces of the jigsaw puzzle just kept coming together just through that persistence. And there, I don't know if you want to call it resilience, but I just don't want to make the wrong decision here. I want to make the right decision.
Because I reckon it's such an important one. There are young people out there that are digital natives. They understand viral content. They understand what works. And if you gave them a retainer, like Abby said, of a few thousand dollars a month to be the main principal content creator doing what is the hard thing, you would be way, way ahead, and it won't cost you equity. They will be absolutely loyal to you. And that's what I think anyway.
Well, let's put it out there, right? Like if there's anyone out there that's listening, or if there's anyone out there that knows someone who might be an amazing brand ambassador for a sleep or a wellness brand, hit me up. Hit me up on my Instagram. Hit me up on my X, because we'd love to have a chat with them.
Yeah.
What are you offering?
All right. No, guys, obviously, both of you, if you're interested in doing it, if you're a content creator, go watch that Gabby podcast, or go to CMY Cube's Instagram account, and you'll see the young guy who is just creating content for that brand constantly, and he's loving it. Gabby's delighted. It's all outsourced to them, to this guy who's exclusive.
Eric. Another great brand to look at as well is Revel Sauna, is AJ Williams. And Dan does his ads, right? And he'll just ring up AJ and say, listen, need 50 new pieces of content. And AJ will just sit there over a week or two and just pump out the content and send it to him. And he's mainly the guy that's doing it, right? Like he's literally setting up ice baths on, you know, in Broad Beach and you know, along the boardwalk, and having random people jump in the ice bath, and he's interviewing them in the ice bath, talking about the ice bath. Like the best content is the content that actually doesn't look like an ad. And so we got to get that out of our head of just going, okay, we need ads, right? But the thing is, when you start looking at amazing content, are the ones that you feel like you're not even being sold to. And I think this younger generation is starting to get an art for that, whereas our generation, we're used to being sold to old school style ads. These guys are doing it so organically that you're not even realizing it. And then people are buying it and they didn't realize they've just been sold to. And I think when I'm talking to these young guys like Ethan, the videographer, and these guys, and they're offering videography services and they're offering ad services, I'm like, you're missing the biggest piece to the puzzle. If I was a young guy and I was half creative, or a young girl half creative, or I had the energy right back then to start an agency, it would be a content creation agency, right? It would be not just strategy, actually going out there and doing the content, being the face. Kenny from Light My Bricks, same thing. He's got that person in a lot of his videos that is correct. Like, two or three people that are like just gung-ho over this, you know, these Lego lights. And then what happens is they become, like you just said, the brand ambassador. They become an actual person that people look forward to seeing every week. And I think that's a crucial part.
It's funny because we kind of have a go at these Gen Zs, or whatever the latest generation is, or millennials, like the boomers, like to have a go at these kids who want to be YouTubers when they grow up. But literally, I said to Dom at that dinner, I said, you know, the best return on investment here for us would be if the founders were producing the content. And I'm like, you know, one of our brands is more predominant, or both our brands predominantly more female purchasers. And I'm like, it'd be great if you could do it. And she's like, babe, she goes, it's a full-time job. And it is, it's a full-time gig. But more than being a full-time job, it's a career. Like if you're good at the content and the brand building and the ambassadorship, I would be silly not to want to offer someone down the road equity to continue that, to keep that going. You can literally make yourself invaluable as you hone that craft. Yeah. You don't need a university degree. You don't need anything but to want to learn, to practice being on camera. And, you know, I just think that so much of the products that we buy in the future are going to be endorsements from people that we see online.
And Mark, how much better is that deal from an entrepreneur's point of view? You know, like rather than asking for this huge retainer percentage of spend and then equity, it's like, no, come in and produce great content, make yourself invaluable, and then to the point where we literally can't look up. James, you're going
to
say?
I was just going to say, to Eric's point about UGC as well, Simon Beard of Cult Kings did a story on this yesterday about, you know, when you look at content creators and UGC, it's like, don't go for the Kim Kardashian. They cost a bomb. They don't work. They're inauthentic in a Cult Kings. They used to get the ambassadors to come in, but they didn't take film clips of those guys. They took clips of them trying on the product, or people engaging with the product because they came to the store. So that was all. And he just said, like, forget polished content, forget using high paid influencers. It's not about that at all. So it's a good reality put forward from someone who sold his company for $600 million.
Eric, you're going to round us out here today at the last piece. So guys watching every week on these Friday pods, if we have product, if you have a physical product business and you want us to put a spotlight on it, you can send one of your products to us and we will do a shout out here on the pod for free, because we want to put a spotlight on our listeners' businesses to help you grow. We don't charge anything for this. And it's a way of us giving back to the community for watching. Eric, what do we got this week and how do people send in stuff if they want to be featured here?
Yeah, so if people want to be featured and they want to send a product, send an email to hello@unemployable.com.au. We will then have our team have a look at those emails. And then if they think it's a viable product, they'll ask some questions and then we'll give you our PO box details. So I went to the PO box last week and there was a fair few packages there. So we're banked up now probably for about 6-7 weeks, but just keep sending stuff in and we will definitely get to your products. So today we've got a product which is called Outback Jerky. So I'll tell you a little bit first about who Outback Jerky is. So we got a letter here from the owner, Scott O'Keefe. So they own a small snack food factory in Perth with his wife called Outback Jerky, and they make premium beef jerky and pork crackle. And he sent this package here, as you can see, right? Nice packaging, obviously proudly Australian made and owned, right on the front of the packet. Outback Jerky, they've got it looks like a little angry bull in the front. Obviously they got the beef jerky with some peppers on the front, so it looks quite hot. And then you open the package, what they also have is a new product they have, and it's called Keto Crackle, which is unseasoned pork rind crumbs, and it comes in a package like that. And they have their pork crackle as well, which they've got bacon flavor, which looks pretty cool. James will love those ones.
Mate, to be honest, I actually learned a little bit about pork crackle the other day. It's all the fitness influences and people are recommending 65% protein and low in fat, which was quite counter to what I thought. So I'll certainly give it a try for sure.
Yeah, well, they're really targeting the specialty diet markets like the carnivore diet, which I think, Mark, you were on or may still be on.
No, so you've got not anymore. But
not anymore. Yeah, but the beef jerky, 100% Australian beef, smoky beef snack. It's got the Australian flag, high protein, low carbs, as you can see in the packaging there.
Is there a website for them, Eric, where people can check them out?
Yeah, so for you guys that want to know more information, their website is www.outbackjerky.com. And they also would like to get a sneaky subscriber or two. They have a YouTube channel, and their YouTube channel is just go to www.youtube.com/@outbackjerky. So OUTBACK jerky, JERKY. And they sent us a little bit of a gift pack here. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to try it, Adam, unless we send the package out to Cyprus. You might actually be able to sell this there. You could be a distributor in Cyprus for Outback Jerky.
I love these types jerky out there. Well, I would imagine a product like this would do really, really well in China as well. You know, Aussie beef going out into that market. Great product, guys. Well done. It's a growing market, you know.
So and, thanks very much to Scott O'Keefe and family. He's got a signature here on the letter that he sent us. Very professional. So thank you very much. And go support local Outback Jerky, beef jerky made in Australia.
Aussie made, Aussie family. Go help them out, guys. Go buy some of their product. The best compliment you can give, or the best support you can give an entrepreneur, is to buy their stuff and write them a review. So buy their stuff, write them a review. That's the way that you send love to an entrepreneur. Mark?
I was just going to say, that's what a lot of people have started doing with Tesla in the US as well. You're seeing so many people pop up and saying, you know, that's it. I was never going to buy a Tesla, but I've gone out and bought one just to support what this guy is doing. And I think it's the US Oil and Gas Association are actually online. I think they're buying a Tesla for their CEO or something, but they're actually supporting Elon, their competitor, right? Because they're like, this is just ridiculous that we would harm one of our own like this. And just the fact checking as well. I fact checked myself about those government statistics in Australia. It was 27% of the new jobs created in the last 12 months have been government jobs in Australia. And I think something like 2.6 or 2.7% of people are on the NDIS scheme. So I don't know where, I don't know what I was thinking with that other statistic, but fact checked myself there. There you go.
That's good because you were fact checked just the other week, eh? You got famous on someone else's podcast, so.
Yeah. We should give Punters Politics a bit of a shout out. A lot of our listeners have told us to try and get him on the show, and he called us. He put me on blast, and he put Pauline on blast for the 44% of costs being taxes. And I'm not sure if people know this, but I used to work for Australia's largest privately owned land developer and Australia's largest land developer, Stockland. And I was speaking to the general manager during the week, and I don't know about the house side of things, but I asked him, I said, look, in relation to the land side of things, how much of the land purchase price goes to either government taxes, infrastructure levies, state charges, local government fees, etc.? And he confirmed that it's somewhere close to 45% of the land price. And he gave me a dollar value as well. And I'll tell you, the dollar value that he gave me is actually it's a larger dollar value than what the average 400 square meter block of land cost back in 2008, 2009. So the government is now collecting more dollars per block than what a block of land cost in 2008, 2009. So Look, that's not even to mention the fact that the government has created this demand rigged, debt driven flywheel for the purchase of property through immigration and whatnot. That's causing property prices to go up. What's been the main reason that property prices have gone up? Now, if you don't call those things a tax on the Australian people, then I'm not sure what is. But those stats are a lot truer than I think people think.
Yep. Well, thank you to Punters Politics for the publicity. We love your channel, by the way. We'd love to have you on the show. We appreciate the love, even though you were calling us out. We're not sure that you're correct in calling us out, but we love that you did. So thank you for the publicity.
Come on the pod and let's have a discussion. Let's have a debate about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the guy. I think he's doing good content. So, thanks for the coverage.
I'm just a little bit more cheeky.
The simple way to get to the bottom is pull get a developer's feasibility, and you'll soon work out where the money's going. So,
for 15 years I worked with these developers, and I was privy to some of the feasibilities of the projects that they were trying to acquire because I was one of their main salespeople. And I just asked the question, like, how many blocks has Punter developed, right? Like he was out there quoting some academic research papers on the fact that property prices will increase to the level that punters are willing to pay, which is true. But what we have to take into consideration is that the demand and the number of people looking to buy in these new housing estates is largely being driven by immigration. Who controls immigration?
That's right. That's a discussion for another day. Mark, thank you for your input there on the end. It's a real subject. I think governments are experts at hiding the word tax, levies, infrastructure charges, fees. They're all words for tax, fines, and then all the cost of compliance to these government codes on top of the stuff. So that's a whole nother discussion. Guys, I hope you've enjoyed today's pod. This is the Friday episode of Unemployable. It's your first time here. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please like and subscribe if you've enjoyed the content. Drop a comment below. We do read all the comments, even the ones we don't like about Mark's hairpieces and so on.
I replied. I thought it was fantastic.
That was funny. Yeah. So drop.
I enjoy replying to the hate even more. So wind us up.
We said, look, we've all got hair transplants, but not toupees. All right. So just stick with the facts. All right, guys. Lots of love to you. Hope you're having a great time, and we'll see you same time next week. I will be in Italy next week in Florence. I'm not sure whether I should be on the pod next, so we'll see how I go. But it might be the three of you with the ring. And so have a good day, guys. Thanks for watching, and bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.